Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Reverend Guitars have kicked off 2021 with their first ever S-Type guitar. In true Reverend style, this cracker of a guitar features classic looks juxtaposed with modern electrics. Introducing the Gil Paris GPS signature model from Reverend Guitars. Whilst on first glance, the pickup arrangement looks fairly standard for an S-Type. In fact, each of the single coils is a Fishman Fluent single-width pickup. These can be switched with a push-pull tone control between two voicings, a vintage voice, the classic Airy 50 single-coil sound, and a hot Texas voice for a hotter, punchier, more modern alternative. Check out the GPS and all of Reverend Guitars' mouth-watering models at reverendguitars.com. And welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast, season 2, episode 5. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
How come I'm first all the time now?
Oh, I do always do you first, actually, don't I? Okay, fine, forget that. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Naomi McLeod.
Personally, I preferred the alphabetized system that you had, Joe. Okay. But no, this is fine. Hi.
Matt Knight.
What's an alphabet?
And Jay Cross.
That would still have me first.
Well, no, you were...
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, if it was alphabetized...
Yeah, you've created chaos, exactly. Is what I'm trying to get at here.
I mean, yeah, as well, everyone should know, my entire existence on this podcast is to try and put Joe Branton in uncomfortable situations.
And here we are. Exactly. Always ruining my flow, Jay.
That's all right. I'm sure you could just go back to the script that you've written earlier. That's fine.
I'm trying to read from it right now. Anyway, yes, hello and welcome, dear listener. Welcome to the 5th episode in season 5. So we've got some news bits and bobs to talk about. What did I say? You see, you've thrown me off. Oh, no.
Season 5 must be the last season.
Yes, that's correct.
Very few good shows make it past 5 good seasons. 5 is pushing it, I would say.
Yes, but you're probably right there. Probably right. But yes, anyway, we've got some, there's some interesting new bits and bobs in the world of guitars that have come out this week. Oh, we've got a new top tier backer. Hello to Ian. Ian, you didn't give us a surname, so I'm just going to call you Ian.
That's the legend.
So thank you very much, Ian.
Ian,
yeah.
You know, it's Ian. Know him. He's got no surname. It's Ian.
Ah, that's what it is. Well, yes, welcome to Ian. Thank you for joining us. And you, dear listener, can check out the additional episodes of the Guitar Nerds podcast over on our Patreon site, patreon.com/guitar nerds. Now, before we get into the news and things like that, so me and Matt, we're planning towards this new series where we're going to be building pedal boards against each other. And we've started to think about what effects we're going to use and how we're going to put our boards together, and it's led me down this path where I'm like, well, I'm going to have to learn about MIDI
and how to control MIDI Vera switcher as well, so I can make the most of a few pedals, things like the Chase Bliss preamp Mark II, but also the Empress Zoya, which is, you know, a pedal we've had for some time in the Guitar Nerds stock list, but it's something that I've only, like, you know, I'll mess around with the presets, maybe I'll build something, but one thing about the Zoya is it's very time consuming, because it's of course the Zoya is kind of a modular synthesizer in guitar effect form, but even if you want to set up something basic on there, you've got to create an input, then you've got to create an output, and then you've got to link the input and output. But of course, you don't want to do that. That would just create signal. You've got to then pop the things down that you want to have, whether it's a delay or a type of modulation, and then connect those in the correct order. And it's time consuming and complex and frankly beyond me.
That's why MIDI should be taught in schools, Joe. we were talking about other subjects that should be taught in schools better before this podcast started, but MIDI, you know, should be day one. You know, walk into school, what's MIDI? Let's learn about it.
Wholeheartedly agree.
Yes. Yes.
You should have kids on kids on little controller keyboards by age 7 or 8, if you ask me.
Well, it's a bit like did you have that little mouse thing that you programmed in primary school?
Ireland wasn't allowed computers until about 2015, so we're catching up.
Roma, something like that?
Yeah, and you used to like put like 4 to 20 left, 10, and then it used to just like go along the floor.
Oh, yeah. I didn't have any of this.
I am quite a lot older than you. I had nothing like this.
Roma, it was called. Roamer. It's this little like flying saucer with a smiley face on. And this was like
like a Henry Hoover.
Yeah, well, more like one of those vacuum cleaners.
Roomba.
Roomba. Yeah, more like one of those.
Right.
And like the height of code, the sort of coding we were taught was literally forward 10, and it would go forward like 10 foot or 10 meters or whatever. Then turn left, then forward, and stuff like that.
I see.
Was it a little bit like the game Snake for Nokia phones?
Yeah,
kind of.
I mean,
the iconic Snake.
IRL Snake. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
This was originally invented in the 1960s. Wow, you go on the website and the website looks like it's from the 1960s as well.
Yeah, I'm just on it now. No one outside of the UK would probably get that. People that are our age might just remember this. That and that little calculator that had the man with the moustache on it.
I don't know about that.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. This is all completely beyond me. Anyway, so the Empress Zoya. That's what we're talking about. I'm trying to make the most of it, and I'm thinking about how I can control it through, you know, with a MIDI controller as part of a bigger pedal board. But more importantly, I'm like, right, I've got to build some effects, and I thought maybe I'll find some videos on examples of people building effects, and I found something better. I found, and this is, you know, I'm sure everyone knows about this. I'm sure I'm late to the party here, but patchstorage.com has a whole section on the Zoya where people have uploaded patches, and because the Zoya has a micro SD input, you can literally download those patches, and it's just free pedals. They're just all different free pedals essentially that you can download onto your Zoya. And the wonderful thing is people are trying to build copies of existing pedals. So like people have tried to make a sort of Zoya version of the Empress of the Chase Bliss Mood on there and things like that. There's a blooper version that you can download, but there's loads and loads of just interesting different things. And I was like, oh, this is wonderful. I don't have to think about anything anymore. I can just download these patches. I can listen to what they sound like, because they normally come with sound samples or links to videos where the person who's built the patch has demoed them. And you can there are 783 patches available. Whoa. on patchstorage.com. That has just opened up the Zoya to this whole new level. You know, for
how easy is it to? So can you just download? those presets, presumably they tell you how much like storage space they take up, and you can just you know download as many as you want as long as you don't exceed the capacity, right?
Yeah.
And then set those presets.
Exactly.
That's cool.
But it's really cool, just really exciting, just because I feel like it's kind of, yeah, it's just like getting a whole bunch of free stuff that I didn't have before, just, you know, from all these wonderful things that people have created. So definitely worth checking out if you know.
I mean, that's what I like about the Zoya. I think it's, I mean, today while I was working, I did watch the upload of a 4-hour ambient synthesizer generative music upload, which is basically just a modular synth that's just, it's basically doing modern day Frippertronics, I guess. And that's what I liked about the Zoya, is you can just do that. So you know, but why bother programming it yourself when someone far smarter with more time can do it for you?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's, or even another way of looking at it is, you know, as opposed to self-deprecating as we so often do, just seeing these as additional creative tools. Like, it's so cool. I'm just looking through it here and also being blown away. I really like the kind of open source nature of how people are kind of tagging. Obviously, everything is tagged Zoya, but all of the kind of, you know, you can go in and look for fuzz, or you can go in and look for reverse, or you can go in and look for pitch shift and kind of narrow down your search, which is awesome. I also like that there's sort of like progress tags, like a few people have marked theirs work in progress, and I see one person has just tagged theirs help needed.
But that's great, isn't it? It's such a wonderful
community. That's what I've got on my Instagram.
It's just a whole community for the Emperor Zoya that I had no idea existed. I feel like
you've talked about it before, though.
Not that I've talked about the Zoya before, but I don't think I've ever talked about there being like a patch hub for it. I mean, there's the Line 6 Helix sort of patch hub, you know. I'm sure that they're there for everything. It's just, for me, I always felt like I was slightly, the Zoya was just a bit too much for me to ever really sit down with and bother with. It was just so complicated, and I feel like this is a wonderful way of avoiding actually learning how the Zoya works and still getting the most out of it.
I'd argue that you absolutely will learn how it works through this.
Yeah, you know, because
I always love, you know, kind of in Ableton, for example, like downloading packs and then kind of trying to reverse engineer some of the cooler effects or some of the, you know, cooler kind of loops and stuff that are on there. So you might find yourself kind of doing the same.
Yeah, I guess so. It's kind of it's quite an organic way to learn things, the sort of reverse engineering method.
And if you're doing that while writing or while jamming, then what better way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I'm glad to see that people are on that platform and engaging with that pedal. I don't see that many people talking about it. I see it on a few pedal boards, but I think it's picked up a bigger following outside of guitar players as well.
This website certainly, I'm looking through the other pedals that it has on there, and it without going too much in depth, it doesn't look like they're especially, I haven't heard of the bulk of these. I think this is more for synth players, this entire site.
I think it's just
there's a lot of synth
tool.
Brands.
It is super cool. I'm excited to dive deeper into that. Now, also this week, I got a new Harmony guitar. Another Harmony. So that's
how many harmonies you got there then?
Well, that's the third one, but this time
three harmonies.
I was going to say, is this a triad now?
Is that on your Zoya preset as well?
Almost definitely. But yes, I was able to get hold of a Harmony Silhouette, which is their offset mini humbuckered guitar. These lovely, gorgeous mini humbucker gold foils. God, the pickups just look so absolutely fantastic in this, on all of the Harmony guitars. You get those cupcake volume and tone controls, a maple neck instead of a rosewood, like the sort of thick rosewood neck that you had on the Juno. This is a much more slender, tapered maple neck with the more traditional Harmony headstock, that six in a row headstock that's angled slightly backwards. Went for the slate finish as well. Lovely sort of, you know, nitro. Smelled fantastic straight out of the bag. And of course, as with all the Harmony stuff, it comes in a mono gig bag, which are extremely good quality.
The silhouettes is the one for me.
Is that your favourite
model? Out of them, yeah. It's my favourite shape for sure. I've obviously not tried any of them, but like it's my favourite shape. I think it looks great.
Yeah. Five guitars now in the range. The Silhouette, the Rebel, the Jupiter, the Juno, and the Comet. The Comet being their only semi-hollow model. The Jupiter and the Juno are their single cuts. And the Rebel's kind of their solid body version of the Comet. The Jupiter and the Silhouette are the ones that I remember most from the original Harmonies. Those are the two Stratotone body shapes that are kind of most familiar with for me. But yeah, the Silhouette's absolutely fantastic. The Mini Humbuckers sound great. I'm always a little worried about Mini Humbuckers. I don't know why exactly. I think maybe... I guess maybe Firebirds
Les Paul Deluxe. I mean, I've never been a big fan of the Les Paul Deluxe, which is, you know, that's kind of what I think of when I think of Mini Humbuckers. But I know that a lot of people absolutely, you know, swear by them. But I've never kind of clicked with them personally.
Mm. Yeah.
But, you know, keen to try them in this.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely fantastic guitar. Just the quality, the finish, the workmanship of this instrument are just second to none. I just think these are... Go on, Matt, sorry.
I was going to say, I mean, I think we said a couple of weeks ago, but this Juno, it is truly one of the best guitars I've played in ages. I mean, I have all my guitars sitting next to my desk and I just keep picking it up going, it sounds so good, just unplugged. Like, it's just a real joy to play, but... plugged in, those pickups, which I've never really tried before, they're sort of like gold foil pickups. I'm just like, it sounds great. It's totally my sound in terms of just like, a, you know, really rich, really boomy, just wicked. Absolutely awesome. Wicked guitars. So impressed for the money.
What's the body wood on those?
That's an interesting question. Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm probably older, I guess. It's
okay.
It seems like that's the most likely for this style of guitar, but I'm not sure. I can't see it anywhere immediately in front of me on there.
No, it's fine.
Mahogany.
Is it?
Right. On the Juno, really? It's mahogany. Yeah, so it's mahogany body, rosewood neck, and fretboard.
Nice. That's actually what I was, I suppose, more specifically asking about, because as soon as you said boomy, I thought, ooh, I wonder, is it a, you know, a darker sounding body wood? That's very cool.
Yeah, it's...
The Silhouette is older, I've just found.
Right.
Yes, okay.
And the Juno is mahogany, yes, you're right.
Mm. I'm just super impressed with these gold foil P90s. I just think it sounds amazing. No need for a tone control. Volume super responsive on the Juno. I just think these are a winner. I'm surprised we're not seeing them elsewhere at the moment. But I've got to say, the Silhouette body shape is wicked.
It's a fantastic looking guitar. I agree with you on the pickups in the Juno. I think those P90s are incredibly articulate and very, very clear. But I will say the same of these, the Mini Humbuckers in the Silhouette. They were surprisingly versatile sounding, just real, like, loads of depth, loads of clarity, like, really cracking for clean sounds as well. I was when it turned up, I routed it through Persona Studio One and the Neural DSP Corey Wong plugin, and just some of the really clean DI sounds you can get on the Corey Wong plugin worked really, really well with a Silhouette. I thought it was completely fantastic. But yeah, I'm excited to spend some time with it over the next few weeks, and I'll put up some little video things on Instagram and whatnot for you to check out, dear listener. But like, fully, thoroughly recommended, the Harmony Silhouette, a super cool guitar. Yes, indeed. Now, I guess we should talk about some kind of news things. Oh, before we do, Matt Knight, you found a guitar that a limited edition instrument that caught your eye for being quite as.
I think I saw this on Instagram a couple of days ago and scrolled straight past it. And then it's just popped up in my inbox just before we started recording. Balaguer Guitars, which we spoke about a few times, have done a limited run of synthwave Espadas. So Espada is their sort of offset sort of body shape, sort of like a slightly squashed Jazzmaster with shorter horns. A synthwave finish. So just imagine the movie poster to Tron, I guess. Very
Drive.
Pink.
I'd say Drive. More than
Very pink and purple with little sunset. Kind of like, you know, when you go to a big city and there's someone spray painting onto a piece of paper using sort of pots and pans to create moons and shapes and landscapes. You know, one of those things you buy when you're a kid when you're like a tenner.
Is that the thing you've done?
Yeah, I love that.
That's the mental image. That's brilliant. That galaxy art is what you're getting at.
Yeah, galaxy
that is
art.
Truly spoken from someone who grew up in Suffolk. That's what that is.
And I've still got
hanging
on
my Ipswich.
Still hanging on my wall. This kind of futuristic synthwave front, which I was like, oh, that's cool. We've probably just made the back, you know, black. Why wouldn't you? No, like silver sparkle. So it's,
Back and sides. Large flake silver sparkle.
Sparkle with, this sort of synthwave front and then a matching headstock to the back of the guitar. So a silver sparkle headstock. I'm in. I just think it looks wicked. I don't think it's that much different to the normal Balaguer spec for the Espada. So older body, maple neck, ebony fingerboard, 16-inch radius. So incredibly flat in terms of what most people would probably be used to.
Yeah, that is super flat.
But I'm in. I think it looks great.
Really cool.
And
very cool.
At the same time, I also realised Guitar have a secondhand Roswell Rhodes, which was the spaceship guitar with alien inlays.
That's the one. It looks like the Star Trek badge, that one.
Yeah. Which is correct. Yes, with the headstock that matches the same body shape as the body.
It's so
bizarre.
How much is it going for? Because they were expensive.
They were $1,500. This is the made in Japan model as well.
That seems like a good deal. Actually.
Yeah, I mean, probably because not many people really go for that kind of vibe on a guitar.
How much was that one that we... Because we had one in GAC
It was like $3,500.
It's a lot of money, yeah.
Would you go for the Balaguer or would you go for the Roswell Rhodes?
If the Roswell Rhodes was in the Balaguer finish, I think you may have potentially the best guitar ever made.
That would be sick.
I wonder if they ever did a Roswell Rhodes in pink. Only red, blue... grey and black. Shame. Missed out. The silver does look like... Oh, there's a layer. It's like a grey silver. They did a version with a trem, and it does look like a spaceship. So that is pretty cool. It sort of reminds me of, on a side note, do you remember the Yamaha, I want to say, AG7s? That had an LED volume control. So it took
yes, and it had like there was a line drawn on the body front that sort of like that ran from the volume control to the output jack. Is that right?
It was I'm never going to remember. RGX-A2 was the model name there.
Where do you store this rubbish? Honestly.
Yamaha AGX-A2 was the had mini humbuckers, sort of mini humbuckers, but they were dual rails. I think it also, there's something weird going on with the neck, almost like it's bolted on very weird. But yeah, like mini soap bars, but were full humbuckers. The name of the guitar was on the body. It had one line drawn across it for no reason. And the LEDs were plastic and had the volume and tone were plastic and had LEDs underneath that lit up as you turned them.
Very
I remember
useful,
we never
practical.
I don't remember selling a single one.
So if you want to try one, just make an appointment with GAK.
They did a bass version of this as well.
They did, yeah. It was that sort of period in time where, because this was probably, I think this was early 2000s, same sort of time as the, what was it called, the Ergodyne? Strats, the Fenders,
the Aerodynes,
Fenders. Yeah. But then there was Ergodyne, was what Ibanez were putting out, which were
that's
those
correct,
they were,
which was the body wood.
It wasn't a wood, it was a mold, it was that a plastic, was it? I can't remember exactly what they called it, but it was like a it was all a molded putty.
Ibanez Ergodyne series,
Smorph. Yeah, exactly like that. That's pretty
much. Don't like
much
the shape. Don't worry about it, mate. Just like, you know, morph into something else.
So
we actually spoke about those Ergodynes a few years ago, and I was like, man, these things are kind of cool in like a weird way. And a listener sent me one.
Here's a crazy story. Well, it's not really that crazy, but could be a very different podcast. I could be a very different person. So when I bought my first proper guitar, I say proper guitar, I had a, you know, when I got to spend some big bucks on a guitar when I'd been playing for a few years, and it was a big birthday and I'd saved up, and I went to the guitar shop in Ipswich, which was called the Guitar Shop. And
walk past those people spray painting, you know, fluorescent sun and moons on the walls.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is what happened on every street corner in Ipswich at the time.
And I eventually whittled my guitar choice down to two guitars: a Fender Lone Star Strat, which was the HSS Strat, which had the Big Apple and the two Texas Specials in it. And an Ibanez Ergodyne series. I can't remember the exact model, but they're sort of like 600 quid one. And played those for a while, and I walked away with the Fender. But just imagine walked away with the Ibanez.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been worse. Indeed. Your first guitar could have been a 7-string.
My friend's first guitar, electric guitar, was the
RGA7.
The 7321, which was the cheap Korn.
That was my second guitar.
Oh, was it your second, Jay?
It wasn't my first. No, my first was a Diamond Les Paul alike.
The only reason I was thinking of that the other day is I was listening to Korn and going, oh, maybe I want an Ibanez RG7321.
No, you got to get a K7 if you're going down that route.
But the funny thing was, I was watching their, I think it was Korn live at Woodstock. I fell down a Woodstock 1999 hole and was watching loads of videos from Woodstock 1999. And their live performance, their guitar rig was a Mesa Boogie dual rec and a Line 6 Vetter. What a rig. What a 90s rig. I've got to say, though, amazing guitar sound. That and Wes Borland on the Limp Bizkit performance. I'm like, he's using two JC120s. And you watch it and you're like,
what?
He's got one of the best guitar sounds. Yeah, two JC120s.
What was he using for drive?
I can't remember what he had on the pedal board. But
Bad Monkey, probably. Yeah.
He was using that weird Ibanez that only had four strings on it. One bass string.
What was that? I don't remember that.
It was a normal 6-string, but he only strung it out with 4 strings. So I think it had one bass string and 3 guitar strings.
Right. Weird. So not even like a tenor guitar type idea or anything.
No, just a weird modded.
I don't remember that. I remember being obsessed with him and I thought I knew his entire rig, but apparently not.
No, yeah, I remember he played, I'll see if I can find it. I'm pretty sure it was a It was an Ibanez, and because I know later on he had a custom from some sort of unknown brand, like four string bass thing. For a while, I think he was doing it with Ibanez. So he had these weird ones where he'd only have like a couple of strings on it.
The presidents of the United States of America play something like that, Jay?
Yeah, they had the bass.
It was an SG, wasn't it? Or something?
I don't remember what the guitar was, but the guitarist, I think, only had four strings. Yeah, I think it was an SG. Guitarist only had four strings and the bass player only had two strings. Because, you know, I mean.
I've seen them
more
twice.
Do you need?
And
absolutely.
They are one of the best bands I've ever seen live. They're wicked.
Yeah, I was quite pissed, but I remember them being good when we saw them.
Yeah. I really want that Yamaha signature Wes Borland guitar.
I thought he played PRS. When I think of him,
he played Ibanez in the...
In the studio. The PRS is just for live, you know. For
yeah, yeah. He obviously played Ibanez in the late 90s because... Everyone did in that scene. And then he moved to Yamaha. And I think now, more recently, he plays PRS. But his Yamaha, which we spoke about on the podcast before, is mental.
Wait, what was it? I don't remember this conversation at all.
I think it's not a baritone, but it is heavily down-tuned. Really weird scale length. The Wes Borland CV820WB. Six string, had a detuner on it, so you could drop tune the low string.
Yeah.
Had wide range humbuckers, a tremolo system, which was locking as well, obviously. So how that worked with the detuner, I don't know.
I think you had to. Isn't it like a?
It's like a lever nut sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Because didn't the Noodles guitar have the similar thing?
I think Ibanez at that time were like, oh my god, everyone wants to play drop D. So I think it was just like
the CV820 is Yamaha, not Ibanez.
But I think there was some Yamahas at the time.
Yeah, because the Noodles guitar was Ibanez, the NV2 or something like that.
This kind of reminds me of the ESP Ben Wyman.
Yeah, Ben Wyman. That's what I was thinking as well. I can't remember what that series is called.
I know which one you mean. I can't think.
X something, isn't it?
Of course.
Something like that. I can't remember. I can't remember what they...
No, we're terrible. Anything other than a Fender Strat, and we can't even name it.
He's actually...
X-Tone? Is it that?
You might be right.
The X-Tone, I think, was their kind of like weird offset. I think it was X-Tone, yeah. Sure.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot... We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
But yeah, that Wes Borland is basically impossible. I don't think they made that many at all, unsurprisingly.
Well, I just found a picture of him with a Fender Starcaster, and all of a sudden his Yamaha makes sense to me.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very similar. But yeah, that's crazy guitar. Oh man, we should do a new metal special. Just talking
about
the rigs.
5 minutes. Here's a Jewel Rick. Here's a PRS.
Exactly.
Here's an Ibanez RG. Thanks very much. See you next week.
Classic. Oh, maybe I want an Ibanez RG now. Just that, and a little Mesa Boogie.
Everyone should always own one tasteless guitar.
How many do you own at the moment, Joe?
All of my guitars are tasteful, but I'm always on the lookout for an affordable Warwick Buzzard. So,
Yeah. Did you have a new metal phase, Naomi? I know me and Matty did.
Absolutely, I did. I mean, new metal was my phase. That, I mean, between that and punk, probably never quite died out. Still,
not a phase, Mum.
Yeah, exactly. I accept that I'm 32, but I'm telling you it's not a phase.
Yeah,
I absolutely did. In fact, my second guitar... No, oh my God, my first guitar was a Randy Rhodes, and I remember... as you were talking about the Ibanez RGs, that they were like the guitar that I would ogle, you know, when I'd be in town in Dublin with either one of my parents, and I'd be... you know, too nervous to ask the guy, could I play it? Because, you know, there were very few people my age allowed to try things in the shops, and definitely no other girls doing same. And in fact, anytime I did try out, like literally until my 20s, anytime I did try something in a shop and, you know, didn't yet know about amps or whatever, I'd be like, could you turn this down, please? Could you turn this down lower? I don't want to be heard. You know, several minutes later be like, yes, here's 400 quid, thank you goodbye, I'm so sorry. My dream guitar was one of the Ibanez or G7 series, I think, and God, I need to dig out a picture of myself with that Randy Rhodes, because it sounded unbelievable. And in fact, I won not one but two Battle of the Bands at school.
Yes.
playing Iron Maiden covers with it.
Fantastic.
So to answer the question, I suppose, yes, I had a phase. Yes,
Joe, absolutely. did you, or were you, and I mean, I realise this sounds like I'm leading up to a cuss, but you're just, you know, a couple of years older, and I wasn't sure if you were just, you know, a couple of years wiser at the time.
No, I hated new metal. Oh,
yeah,
I hated it.
I thought you probably
there
would
was,
have done.
It was, my school had that real divide of like a punk and new metal, or, you know, pop punk and new metal, and you were one or the other. You definitely weren't both. I was in the big fight that happened at Reading, in Reading 2000. When it was
something
Slipknot were playing before Blink-182, or maybe after. I think they were playing after Blink-182. And so there were all the Blink-182 fans at the front, and all the Slipknot fans were trying to get to the front to watch Slipknot. And it just ended up in this massive fight.
You're telling me this sort of like actual cultural... intercultural riot.
This is like the Mods and the Rockers.
It really felt like that. It was just like lots of people in boiler suits with face paint fighting lots of people in three-quarter length shorts and Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah.
I need to try and find footage of this. That is
incredible. That is full on.
It was wonderful. I was very much, I hated all that sound. I hated like the scooping that was going on.
Yeah.
I hated the tones, the weird tweetery clicking of bands like Korn and stuff like that.
Korn bass sound, I never really got. It is very, very weird.
No, me neither.
Very weird. Yeah. But one of my first gigs was I went to see Korn at the Docklands Arena, which is no longer there. I think it's part of the Olympic Park now. I think it got torn down for the Olympics. But one of my first ever shows was Korn and Puddle of Mud at the 2002.
Oh, yeah.
So I was 14 or 15, I guess.
Wow, that's a lot of boiler suits at that gig.
Yeah, there was. It was full on.
Yeah, just a few years ago, actually, I saw a Slipknot and Korn doubleheader in Dublin.
Oh, yeah, I remember that tour. I bet that would have been great.
And it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, still to this day, you know, I would probably happily buy a ticket to see Slipknot live just because they're that good live. But seeing them and Korn together, and, like, you know, it being in, what year was that, 2015, end of 2014 into 2015, and, like, you know, arguably most of the crowd were sort of like our age, you know, people who really fallen in love with them in our teens. But it was so good to just see that it was still an incredible gig and that both bands were completely on it. It was like a very reassuring trip down memory lane.
I saw Slipknot 2019 for the tour of their new record. And it's just, like, live, it's just amazing. It's just their sound's amazing. You know, it's one of those bands that have just really refined themselves and their sounds. And it's just, like, it's just so good. It's amazing because Amy always goes on at me because I go and see a lot of gigs and I do the kind of arms fold, stand at the back. I'm like, yeah, I'm just really enjoying it. Amy's like, never engage with it. But then I went to a Slipknot gig and, like, literally sang the words to every song. And she was like, this is unbelievable.
I sort of missed Slipknot at the time. I only really got into them recently. I think by the time I was really starting to pay attention, I think, Joe, I was kind of on the tail end of that. Very much like, no, I like Green Day and I like The Offspring and I like Cap Down and, like, you know, all these kind of, like, UK punk bands and stuff. And it was like, I don't like Slipknot. And, like, I've gone back and listened to them. And, like, there's a load of those bands. Like, I'm sure I talked about this on the podcast before, but, like, Rage Against the Machine, what a good band. What a great band. I wasn't really paying attention at the time. And, I mean, the first record, all those songs are way too long for me and I struggle with that. But, like, I listened to Battle of LA recently. So good. Like, absolute bangers. But yeah, like, that new Slipknot record that came out last year, that's absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
And in terms of musicianship as well, I mean, like, it's with good reason that for so long, like, Jim Root and Mick Thompson have been so kind of highly regarded. And Paul Gray, God rest him as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible bassist.
I really like the new bass player. He's got a very cool signature status bass. Which
I should get him on the podcast. I spoke to him a few times, and he was the one that actually got me tickets to the gig, believe it or not. And he massively into gear because he was the guitar tech for Mastodon for about 10 years. And he basically knew everyone in that scene and then got recommended to, like, the Slipknot gig, basically. And sort of, although I think he said in his own words, he's like a better guitar player than he's a bass player. Like, he's a phenomenal guitar player. An absolute, like, monster guitar player. Just went along and was like, yeah, I can probably do the bass thing. But he sort of knew loads of people in the band already. But yeah, he was the guitar tech for Mastodon for years and years and years.
Oh, right, cool.
He would definitely be a good one to have on the podcast at some point, I think, Joe, just because his knowledge on gear is insane. Yeah.
Awesome. I just thought it was really cool to see someone kind of in a band like that playing a status, like this, a brand of bass that are really kind of defined by that squeaky clean 80s funk. And he'd sort of metalized them, which was pretty cool.
Well, especially the fact that he does have the LEDs on. Yeah. On stage as well. I just think he's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, he's great.
But then again, if you've got a DJ that's on a moving platform for an entire gig, then, you know, pretty much anything goes, I guess.
Yeah, that is true. I just like the Pink Floyd and Slipknot have, you know, play the same basses. That's quite cool. But but also Jim Root, you know, speaking about signature models, probably the most tasteful guitars in, you know, sort of signature model stuff for metal. Like, I feel like he almost, he sort of took things away from being the, you know, the K7s and made them into, like, imagine a Telecaster for metal. I know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know, obviously.
He totally revamped with his signature Tele, didn't he?
Exactly. And is it just a Jazzmaster now? Jay,
no, I think there's still a Strat. I think there's a Strat Tele and Jazzmaster, isn't there? I'm not sure. Mm. I thought they were all still available.
I think I remember seeing a kind of rig rundown with him. I think it was 2019, It was a really good story, actually. A fan reached out who had like a really small YouTube channel. He's like, oh man, I'd love to come and interview you and talk to you about gear. And he was like, all right then. And did like an interview with this guy who, you know, is not one of the big guys. And he's like, oh, I always talk to, you know, the big media people. I wanted to talk to like a real fan about what I use. And he was saying that he doesn't really have like, I think one of his is a custom shop, but he's like, most all of my stuff's like just off the shelf.
Just off the shelf, yeah.
Which I think is great. We've talked about Music Man doing the same, the Music Man artists just off the shelf. I think it's nice when artists are using the same guitars that someone else can go in and buy. They haven't just designed something and been like, oh yeah, but can you get matey who's been here for 50 years to build it for me and just like, sling some stuff out to everyone else. You know, it's really nice that he's just, you know, that stuff's.
I think that's also sort of testament to how good production line guitars are now, though. Do you know what I mean?
For sure.
The stuff that comes off of the shelf, I mean, what else really do you need to do to it?
Yeah.
In general, you know.
And to finish that, this part off, I guess, and with Jim Root. I don't know if you saw the story of that he posted on Instagram, I think a couple of weeks ago. He was like, oh, I've just checked the date. I've just done a bit of a cleanup of my guitar room. And I found this Gibson box of this Gibson that they sent me from exactly 10 years ago. Never opened it. And then he's like, I like the idea now of never opening it. Because it could be the greatest or the worst guitar I've ever played. And I was just like,
wasn't it? It was like a Silverburst Firebird or something.
Yeah, it's like a Silverburst custom or something. And
they'd given it a custom serial number of 004, which is obviously his number, his Slipknot number.
It's his Slipknot license plate.
Yeah. Very, very funny.
Yeah,
very cool indeed.
Never opened it.
Now we should talk about some news. Talk about some new things that have come out. And I guess I'm not sure we spoke about them on the podcast, but we did speak about them on the group and on Instagram. We've had two new pedal board things come out. Boss and Didario both vying for kind of the new. Well, I guess with Boss, it's just an upgrade. But Didario trying to kind of redefine the pedal board market a little bit. Naomi, why don't you tell us about the Didario pedal boards?
Yeah, indeed. I'm very excited by these. So in keeping with a lot of naming conventions these days, I'm guessing it's called Expand. They spell it X-P-N-D. But yeah, they've done two models of expandable pedal board. And I feel like this is one of those designs where it's like, how did no one think of this before? They're calling it a, you know, game-changing telescoping pedal board. It's not unlike if you imagine sort of like a boom mic stand on how those telescope and can be, you know, a short or tall stand. Basically, you can have, you buy it at its initial width and then I think it's a switch mechanism. I haven't had one to hand, so we only have the photos to look at thus far. But
so I guess it would be tiered. I guess I wonder if it's going to be like it will click into its next expandable point, or if it's like completely free. You know.
Yeah, that I wondered the same, whether it's a little bit like a keyboard stand, which is sort of like a notched opening, or if it is completely free. Either way, very cool. They have two models, Expand 1 and Expand 2, I'll call them. One is a 2-rail and the other is a 4-rail. I mean, generally, I'm a huge fan of Didario accessories. I think their build quality is really good. They seem really, really excited about these as well. They have a cable management system in there. And in terms, again, of quality, they're calling it aircraft quality rails. Also, I am really curious for anyone who does buy these. I really hope they will stand the test of time, but they come with the Velcro pre-installed.
That's exactly what I thought as well. Like having the Velcro pre-installed on that lower tier that can be folded in and out.
That'll go in and out. Yeah.
Sounds like trouble. But also, how do you transport these? Because if you've set your board up, if you've set your pedals up, it's stuck at whatever that fixed size
is. Yeah, it is. Absolutely. So they have done a bag for each. They've done a transporter bag in
two expandable
sizes
as well. Is that like
I saw quite a few people.
You can zip a new bit on like cargo shorts.
Yeah. Come on, Jay, it's 2021. No one wants no one wants any new design anywhere, I would say, resembling cargo shorts. Yeah, a few people were quite rightly asking what's the story with the bags? Are there tons of bags or how does this work? So again, just from kind of the one or two photos that I can see on their site, I think it's that the bag exists to fit each board at its widest, and then there's included partitions to basically make up the space, make up the empty space if you have the board at its narrower.
Oh, that's configuration. Smart. Yeah, that's smart.
It is. Yeah, so like in the photos, they have things like like a volume or a wah pedal there on its own outside of the board, kind of mocked up in the bag. So yeah, I'm into these. I'm not saying I'll get one straight away, but were I back gigging or were I kind of, on kind of session gigs and stuff like that again, where you could be doing different gigs per week, different gigs per day even, this seems like a really, really cool design. I did see like a few people commenting were kind of saying, you know, why would I need this? You know, like I have my board and it's that size. But for all of those people, I feel like there's 10 other people for every one post saying, Oh no! I bought this tasty new pedal. Oh, where will I fit it?
I think that's
you know,
where
I feel like this has answered it.
I looked at it more as like you've got the flexibility to, you know, continue your pedal chain if you want to, rather than just buying, because I saw people saying like, well, this doesn't make any sense because I've got my pedals on there. I can't make it smaller to carry it because I've still got my pedals on there. I'm not going to set my board up every time. But it's like, well, that's not what it's there for. It's there so you buy it and you have it at like the medium point. And then 6 months down the line, when you've bought three new pedals, you don't need to buy a new pedal board. You just rework your current one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, between that and again, with Daidario, I feel like they've a pretty good accessory game in terms of... in terms of their quality, I do hope this stands up to the price. They're not mega cheap. It's $80 street, I think, for the Expand 1 and $170 for the Expand 2. And the bags coming in around similar prices, $70 for the small and $140 for the large.
I see, yeah. Not the most affordable, but pedal boards are just expensive, aren't they?
And one last note actually on accessories is I love seeing anything that makes me think this is a product that would save me buying three products.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I love that this would be like, you know, this would save me buying like Pedal Train, for example, I'm a big fan of, but like this would save me buying the, is it the Nano? I have it here next to me. I have that really small Pedal Train that literally will strap onto the neck of my gig bag. But yeah, it would save me buying like that and the next size up and the next size up. So I'm into that.
Very handy indeed. On the pedal, on the pedal board front, Matt, Boss have also have updated finally the BCB range.
Yes. Believe it or not, the first BCB was in, I've got to remember this now, 1982. Was the first BCB
outrageous.
And I was talking about it and I was like, was that like the first one of the first commercially available pedal boards that time, like a brand actually making a pedal board?
Yeah, it's got to have been.
Yeah, I was just like, that's mad. And the current BCB 60 has been available for 25 years.
I mean, that's bonkers. Oh my gosh. The BCB 60 is just like one of those iconic pieces of kit that we sold, working in GAC, we sold like two or three every day.
I know, it's just mad. So, but obviously a lot changes in 25 years. Not everyone, as much as I would love it and certainly working towards it, not everyone has a pedal board just full of compact pedals. And that was very much designed with the foam layout and the sort of run at the top. The run at the top was designed to fit a TU-12 analog needle tuner, which we no longer make, although still one of the best tuners you can buy. albeit secondhand. But yeah, so we sort of thought, well, why don't we just update the space a little bit more and make it a little bit more flexible? Well, obviously, we've got 200 series, 500 series, you know, the GT
the MS3s, core. The core.
Yeah, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, and it even fits all the way up to a full-size GT1000. So we've sort of changed the layout a little bit and basically made the foam easier to craft. So you don't have to use Velcro if you don't want to. So you can literally cut out the shape of the pedals that you want and you can lay it all out. And then underneath the foam, we've redesigned the molding so you can run all your cables underneath, so you don't have to have any of your cables like on display, which I think is super neat. You know, looks very Instagram.
Yeah,
so
isn't that all we want?
Yeah, exactly. So that's been great because you can cut it out for any pedals using any shape or any size, the foam. Hopefully, you can certainly order spares through our spares department, but hopefully we're going to try and make the foam more readily available so you can kind of chop and change a little bit more. But
that's what I like. That's what I like to hear. The last thing you want is to be like, oh no, I've cut the wrong shape out, or if you rearrange the shape of your board, the chain.
Exactly, yeah. You've had one go at it. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
So you can obviously
measure twice, cut once, you know, what they say.
Exactly, which I didn't do the other day when I drilled into my wall with some bath rails.
Measure once, cut twice.
No, I go for the hold it up and let's drill. So we've got
it's got through switching as well, isn't it? Do they all have like a little through box on them?
No, the 90 has got the little junction box, so you've got the send and return, stereo send and return, and then the stereo out, and then the input, which is quite handy. So yeah, you can literally just open the case and plug in your power supply, and that's the way you go. So that's really good. And obviously do the 30. Case is super lightweight, obviously super durable because it's that really hard wearing molded plastic. And then we've also done a little soup case.
Oh, I love it. I love it so much.
The BCB 1000. So this is the same. It reminds me of like a Samsonite suitcase. It's like, it feels like indestructible. And what's great is it's the pedal board sits in the suitcase, and you can wire all your power supply and everything underneath. And then you've just got this handy little wheelie pedal board, which is obviously great for people on the move and stuff. But yeah, the pedal board actually can be removed and you can undo those little coin screws at the bottom so you can do all your wiring and everything. But hopefully when people can start touring and then gigging a bit more, and certainly for me, when I'm doing a lot more in terms of trade shows and traveling to dealers or whoever, and I need to take some gear around with me, I don't have to carry it in an actual suitcase. I can just take this because it's flight craft sort of regulation. So where you go.
Big question though, Matty, is there a space for your pants? That's the big question. Because if you're just taking that, I obviously you wear a TU3 as underwear, about other people around here, is there space for pants and socks and stuff?
You'll be pleased to know I did make that point when we were developing that product, and I would say that there probably is enough space for a light weekend pack.
Nice.
Okay. Cool. Okay, good to know.
As long as I can put my running trainers and a pair of shorts in there.
You're getting your running trainers in there. Bloody hell.
Yeah, underneath. There's quite a lot of space actually underneath.
That's happy days. You get your running trainers in there. That's fantastic work.
So it's good little. You know, and I love a good pedal board. Me. So that brings my total to over 10. So ridiculous.
I've never owned one of the BCBs. They're definitely cool. I really should get one of these and just have a little mini board.
The 30 is wicked. The 30, I've got a volume pedal, a VB2W and a DM2W.
But you'd need a tuner. You'd have to have a tuner.
A clip-on tuner?
Oh, no. You can't do that.
Tuned by ear? Perfect pitch, mate.
No. This is the problem with the three pedal one for me. I'm like, it's only a two pedal one.
Actually, if you do three compacts or three similar size, you can put a little TU3S up in the corner.
Oh, you could.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
So
he's got you there, Joe. He's got you, Joe. I'm afraid you have to now go and buy one.
But there's no way of muting. That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, having seen your banjo, that certainly is the problem.
You know, that's I'm known for having too many mute switches on my pedal board. It's like it's an ongoing joke within my band about at what point I'll mute
accidentally
myself.
Do it.
Yeah, yeah, just all the time. Like, I fitted volume pedals on my boards for the longest time. Not that I've ever used volume swells ever for anything. Just because I feel like that's something that should be on a pedal board, you know, a volume pedal. I'm forever putting my foot on it and then putting it heel down and then not realizing what's happened, you know, halfway through a song. Always.
Yeah, I've been there too. It's a horrible feeling.
Yeah, it is.
And you know, you bought it and you think you're going to be cool rocking up to the gig with your, you know, very pro looking volume pedal, and it's just.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's not cute, as the cool kids say.
Exactly, which is exactly why I've removed all tuner pedals from my pedal board and now just use either the built-in tuner on the MS3 or now the GT1000 core.
So what are you complaining about? The BCB30?
Well, I could only fit the core on the 30. I wouldn't be able to get anything else.
Would you not get two minis on there as well?
Maybe you could get a...
Could try.
Maybe you could get...
I mean, I cram my pedal boards, like, not to the point where it'll damage anything, but, like, I do pretty much squaz in as much as I can.
That's, yeah.
I'm not into this whole aesthetic, like, space thing.
No. No. Why? You know, no, it's got to be... It's got to be...
This is why I wear pointed shoes, is for that precision on the gig, you know?
It's a great idea.
In there.
Do you know, for the last two Polymath tours, just because we got an extra member and our synth player got obsessed with modular synthesis, and that it really affected how much room we had in the van. And the obvious things to cut back on were pedal board sizes, when basically for the last two Polymath records, I've just been driven the whole time and haven't actually really used that much of the rest of my board. So I've just had a little pedal train nano with just an MS3 on and a compressor. And that's been the whole lot. I feel it is, you know, I don't like it, like not having a big pedal board. Even if I don't use it, I feel like it's a real essential. Oh, there you go. Jay, what pedal board do you use?
I don't know.
Do you actually have anything? Do you have anything pre-built? I just realized.
Yeah, I do.
No,
yeah, I've got a pedal train. Hang on a sec. I've rearranged my like office a little bit, and it's just sort of out of sight. Give me a sec. It's a pedal train. I can't see which one it is, but it's a pedal train. It's one of the medium sized ones. It's got like eight pedals on it.
Is that like the Metro?
Sorry.
Is it one of the Metro series?
Yeah. Yes. Let's go with yes. Yes, it's a pedal train Metro. It's got about eight pedals on it. I've got the bag. It's very useful. I've literally never taken it out of the house, so I don't know why I've got the bag. Because
great review. Yeah, keep going.
You know, when I play gigs live, I play with the bass, and I'm not sure how. I know you guys are kind of like amateur bass players, but me being a serious bass player, obviously I only need a tuner, and so that stays on top of the amp so that I don't lose it.
Excuse me, Jay. Effects lovers have rights, and we are not afraid to exercise them on this here podcast.
No, that's fine. You go do some exercise. That's okay. I can't at the moment, as we were talking about earlier. So it's
I would request for Jay to be kicked off at this point, please.
Jay, you have not read the standing orders.
That's exactly what I was getting at.
But I've got that. I've had other stuff in the past. I had a Stag UPC 688 for a while. That was great.
Oh, wow.
That was massive, and I had again three pedals in there, and that was when I was using them for vocals.
Nice.
Wow.
Did anyone else ever do the cutting board trick, or like just have literally a wood board with Velcro? Because I did two different wood boards with Velcro, and literally just like my Bronco, just stained the wood with whatever I could get at like Woody's, like the local hardware store, and on multiple occasions had people coming up being like, "Wow, where did you get that?"
Oh, it's a great tone.
I literally got to be like, "Okay, so see this here. go to Argos, get a 17-inch laptop bag for like a tenner, and then whatever nearby piece of wood you can put some stain on, and you have yourself an aesthetic board.
Maybe people should start buying those. Have you seen the Fender Strat and Tele chopping boards? Have you seen those?
Oh, no, I've not.
Are they just like body yes. shaped?
Yeah. It's nice. Body shaped. It's not like it's obviously not like an actual like it's not like an off cut or anything. It's just like a in the shape. I've got one at home and
yeah,
it's great. It's just like it's quite big, so it's just it's up on the top shelf. So I only get it down when there's people around to watch me chopping. it's wicked. But maybe that's the next step. If you play a Strat, get a Strat chopping board and use that as your pedal board. Fantastic.
Absolutely. Be like that Roswell Rhodes with the matching headstock.
Yeah.
back when I was a kitchen designer, I got
you're such an anomaly. Like, you've had so many weird little lives. Back when I was senior kitchen designer for the Royal House of Windsor. I was fitting out the kitchens at Buckingham Palace. Just like
it wasn't Buckingham Palace, it was the other one. Anyway, back when I was a kitchen designer, I made myself a pedal board out of worktop offcuts, but I also I thought this was the greatest idea. I think I've mentioned this once before on the podcast. I routed out a hole in the middle of the board where I fit a little
waste disposal unit.
Clock waste disposal unit. Very
for,
good.
For unwanted riffs. In you go, mate.
I put a little alarm clock. I rooted out a hole and put like a little clock in the middle so I would always be able to tell the time at gigs, so I knew.
I'm kind of into that.
It didn't work. Like, the batteries in the clock ran out really early and I kind of glued it in, so there was way of getting...
Like Disco Stew and his goldfish shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
it's like the steampunk version of just having your smartphone down there so you can see the time.
That's exactly what it was.
The idea of you, like, just before you go on stage, you go over to the promoter and you're like, yeah, sorry mate, how long have we got? Oh, was it, yeah, 25 minutes. Yeah, no worries.
Yeah. Just let me set my analog alarm.
Synchronizing watches. Yeah,
I like the idea as an alarm clock with one of the old school ones with the two bells either side, so you set a little alarm and they're in the middle, and then that's actually routed through the delay pedal, so the end of the set ends with that.
That's actually a great idea.
Throw a foot switch into that.
Yeah,
get it on and off.
That's a new pedal right there.
It is indeed. Yeah. Now that actually does bring us up to all the time we have on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast.
Is alarm clocks going off?
You can, of course, join us on Patreon at patreon.com/guitarnerds for an extra episode every single week. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. $1 will get you this episode ad-free and early. $5 will get you access to the Patreon special episode and our entire back catalogue. And $10 will get you the lot. Plus, I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. Find us on all your favourite social media platforms and join us on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks very much for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Cheers, gang. Right.
Bye.
Todd Simons, Joe Park, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Shane M, Jeffrey Wax, Eric Hammer, Samuel Frost, Brian Eichler, Gavin Van der Linden, Jacob McGee, Andy Manley, Scott Hunton, Robert Butterworth, Simon Milbourne, Marcus Alcadaraki, Stuart Watson, Christian Van Hansen, Keith Adams, Michael McFair, Eric Fowle, Ryan McDermott, Merrick Peters, Joe Puckett, Richard Sunworth, Jack Cutmore, Ken Sayers, Abe Matthews, Utopia the Band, Sean Arlo, John Angden, Rob Gould, Tucker Abbott, Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Dave Nagel, Stephen Burke, Aaron Sherman, Dave Lee, Jake Gray, Scott Kennedy, Blake Wyman, Christopher Loseth, and Dan St. Short, Brad Paige, Annie McKenzie, Robin Smith, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, Matt Moore, David.
All of my time, listen, it's your pizza nerds. I spent all of my time, listen, it's your pizza nerds.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.